You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Seven of the world's 10 highest mountains are in Nepal, including Mount Everest, but this morning we're not discussing trekking or mountain climbing. Our focus is the trajectory of a revolutionary political organization that waged a 10-year-long people's armed struggle in Nepal from 1996 to 2006. And then the Communist Party Maoist, despite its military successes, chose to shift to a peaceful path of electoral and parliamentary efforts to transform Nepal's society. To analyze the change and its consequences for Nepal as a whole, for the Communist Party Maoist itself, and for Nepal's neighbors, India to the south and China to the north, I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Chitra Tiwari. Dr. Tiwari is a Nepalese journalist and political analyst specializing in South Asian affairs, and it's a pleasure to welcome you back to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, Chitra.
Thank you very much for having me in your program.
Last time we had you on the program some time ago, 2003, much to cover since then, but I'm wondering if you could tell me, in 2006, when the decision was made to move from armed struggle, which had had many successes, to concentration on electoral and parliamentary efforts, why that shift took place?
That's a very good question. Back in 2003, when I was here, the Maoist Party was still fighting the insurgency. By 2005 or so, the party had achieved what one may call the strategic uprising level within the Maoist People's War framework. But then at that time, there was a king who was fighting two-front war. He was fighting the Maoists, he was fighting the political parties. And the Maoists alone were not in a position to take over the power. So probably they thought that by aligning themselves with the political parties who had at that time wanted to establish relations with the Maoists to fight the king. So they came together in November of 2005, and they struck a deal in New Delhi for a 12-point agreement, under which the Maoists agreed to participate in multi-party political system in exchange for the political party's agreement to do away with the monarchy.
So what successes happened in consequence of that? And then we'll get to difficulties later.
Well, the consequence of a 12-point agreement was that the political parties organized a massive pro-democracy movement with the support of the Maoists, and that led to the capitulation of the monarchy. And then there was elections, and in the elections, the Maoist party emerged as the largest party in parliament, although not a majority party. The parliament, the constituent assembly actually, you know, functioned as both the parliament and as constituent assembly. The parliament abolished the institution of monarchy. And then the Maoist party formed a government with its leader Prachanda or Pushpakamal Dahal as the prime minister. But that government did not last for more than 9 months. There was one incident. The incident was that the chief of the army was not really following the orders of the new government. So the new government of Prime Minister Prachanda sacked the chief of the army. But immediately, president stepped in. The Prime Minister's order was revoked. So in protest against presidential action, Prime Minister Prachanda resigned. And then we have this instabilities again and again. So in the last 3 years, we have had three governments there. And one government lasted for about 1.5 years. And then there is another government which is formed just about a month, maybe 2 months ago. And this government has to finish its job within the next 3 months by writing a constitution, which is doubtful.
So it's at a current impasse. What has been the consequence of that impasse in terms of both the Maoist party and the other political parties in the parliament?
Well, the consequence is instability. No one is really certain as to what is going to happen next. Even if we talk to the responsible leaders of many, you know, parties, no one has a definitive answer as to this is exactly what's going to happen. And the effect is, suspicion in the mind of the people and also fear in the mind of people that it could turn. If the constitution is not made in time, this time, they cannot really renew the mandate of the Constituent Assembly. They have to finish it within the next 2 months. If they don't do it, the chances are that country could engulf into a new, a civil war. With multiple forces in action, and its impact would be in the neighborhood, like in the south. India is watching the developments seriously, and not only watching, it is also playing its own game there. It is using the available political parties in its favor. At the same time, China doesn't seem to be inactive either. Chinese have sent several delegations, including the high-level military delegation recently, and they have offered different aids in highway construction to the construction of a military hospital. So they are forthcoming in Nepal's aid. So they don't want to see Nepal fall into another cycle of instability. The Chinese have concerns. Their concern is that Tibet. In Tibet, there is unrest. The supporters of Dalai Lama, they wanted to have an independent Tibet. The Chinese aren't going to allow that. And they think Nepal, right on the border with Tibet, could be a staging ground. So that being the case, they are very careful, and they are very carefully watching the developments down there. So its impact is not only limited in the country, but it has taken the regional dimension.
And India, why is India interfering so much in Nepal affairs?
Well, India has interests in Nepal since a long, long, long time. It has taken the mantle of the British, colonialism, and whatever the British did during their time, India is doing in similar manner. It doesn't really want to see Nepal as an independent a country with independent voice. It wants to treat Nepal as the extension of its of its own sovereignty. Indian concern is more to do with their own security. As far as security and defense policies are concerned, India likes to see Nepal within the Indian defense matrix that extends from the Himalayas all the way to Sri Lanka. So whatever happens in Nepal is primarily, as Indian policymakers would like to think, is India's defense problem.
And India itself faces a serious revolutionary movements in neighboring areas with Nepal and that region, Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand, etc.
There is a movement that calls itself, that is being called, Naxalite movement, which is Indian Maoist, revolution that has been going on there for the last 4 years. And Indian Prime Minister, about 4 or 5 years ago, is on record saying that as far as internal stability issues are concerned, the Naxalite movement is a major internal security issue. And today, about one-third of India is virtually under the influence of the Naxalite movement. And they do have, paramilitary setup there. So their concern is that the Nepalese situation could be tied up with the Indian, revolutionary movement. So they want to hold Nepal into Nepal and then secure its own border so that the Indian revolutionaries and the Nepalese revolutionaries do not get together, you know, to make a big moment of war in that part of the world.
Well, this is fascinating, complicated, and important, and thank you for coming in and sharing this analysis. And I'll let people know about a meeting where you're speaking tomorrow where they can have a fuller time than we have here.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
I've been speaking with Dr. Chitra Tiwari. He's an independent journalist and political analyst specializing in South Asia. And Chitra will be elaborating at greater length on what we've been discussing this morning. He's going to be speaking at a public meeting, as I mentioned, tomorrow, Sunday, at 3 p.m. It's at Langara College, which is 100 West 49th Avenue, in room A122. And the meeting is organized by the South Asian Network for Secularism and Democracy, SANSAD, and the Progressive Nepali Forum in the Americas.